In the beginning, there was nothing. Then there were comic books. Once you enter our world, there is no escape. Comic exposure begins in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Comic Exposure Podcast. My name is Josh, and with me is my gorilla fighting underground destructor of worlds, the one, the only.
If she dies, I cry. Travis Ratz here.
I like that you went Dolph Lundgren. That's good.
There's a He-Man reboot coming out. Josh, have you seen the trailer?
I have seen the trailer for it. It looks like an Amazon TV show, but it's going to be a movie. I don't know how else to say it. It's this CGI is at a weird place now where it's an uncanny valley situation with the CGI where it's like, we're not going to try to make it look real. We know that this looks kind of goofy.
Okay, but we're going to pull the curtain back even further because as I just said this, I think we figured out in the spring, we're definitely doing like a month of like 2 He-Man comics before this movie comes out.
Yes. No, I'm excited.
Now that just happened. And that, ladies and gentlemen, comic exposure works.
We're going to read
2 He-Man comic books.
Am I going to see He-Man the movie? Yes, I am. Because was I a child who desperately wanted the original He-Man movie to be amazing? Yes. Was I disappointed? Yes. Have I watched it since and been like, that's not as bad? Yes.
Yeah.
So I'm
a cosmic key. You gotta get a cosmic key.
I love it. So on the episode today, you're welcome to the Comics Twitter podcast where Travis Ratz and I dive deep into graphic novels and trade. It's a comic book club, or it's a book club, but with comics, because comic books are books. And every other week or so, we pick a book to read. And this month, February, we have 2 World War II books from TKO Publishing. And the first one we're reading is Partisan, written by Garth Ennis, with art by Steve Epting and coloring by the amazing Jordi Belair. God, she's so good at what she does. This book is a standout. I'm just going to throw it out right there because those colors are mwah. We talk about our love for barbecue sauce panels. Yep. This, my friend, hits the gamut of all the good stuff. We got some barbecue sauce. We got some inky blues. We got good stuff.
This is the kind of stuff that I feel like AI would be good for. It's like, AI, here are all our comics we've done for Comic Exposure. How many of them are colored by Jordi Belair?
Yes, I don't need it to do. I need to do research for me, not draw a picture for me. All right,
yeah,
Travis, let's talk a little bit about. So a while ago, we did some TKO books. We did Sarah, which was Garth Ennis's other female-led Soviet World War II book.
Yeah.
So this is a spiritual sequel. Yeah, spiritual sequel, not a real sequel. We read Sarah, and I think we did another TKO book. But we did Somna, which is TKO.
Yeah, we did another one too. We did like a medieval one. We did a couple of TKO books because when it came out, we really gave them a shot and their first run of books.
The idea behind TKO, I really appreciate the idea. So if you're unfamiliar, TKO is a publishing company that does this thing where they both release the kind of oversized graphic novel and the 6 single issues with it. That you can get either way. So you can order them and they all come out at once, right? Which is kind of an interesting thing. I'm curious as to why do the single issues if you're just going to drop the graphic novel. It seems like a
production cost. Unnecessarily.
Yeah, unnecessarily raises production costs. They have slowed down on their output. Early on, they put out a whole bunch of stuff to begin, and then it has slowly been a trickle of stuff out. I believe you and I read a bunch of issue ones, and we did an episode where we talked about several issue ones. Remember there was the one where it was like the hobo who like is trying to solve a murder in LA, right?
Yeah, and it felt like the concepts were good. but it felt like in a lot of them, it was either you had a great artist, but like the story wasn't hitting with the writing, or you had a great writer, but the art wasn't hitting. It was trying to like pair up the writer and the artist, right?
Yeah. And there were a couple standouts, right? Sarah was a really good one. And
I think what was the standout for was us, the standout. Was the top one.
Yeah. And one that we didn't read for the that we didn't do for the show that I really liked was Jeff Lemire did one called Sentient. And that one was really good about a spaceship and stuff like that. That one was that one. I really enjoyed that one. We didn't do it for the show, but I thought, okay, I saw this come out. We really enjoyed Sarah. So I said, hey, let's read this one. And TKO was running the buy one, get one half off or get one free. I don't remember what the sale was on it.
Yeah.
So we got two books and we decided, hey, they have another newer release that's called The Witches of World War II. So we thought, hey, TKO has themed the month of February for us. So let's read these two books. So let's talk Partisan, Travis Ratz. Can you drop the flyby if you were to do the
sure.
What is it? IB, what is it? Internet Movie Database, IMDb.
IMDb.
If you were supposed to do the the Internet Comic Exposure Database of it, what would your tagline be for this?
Soviet wife of a blacksmith, Alexandra. Husband goes off to war. She's left with her two young children. When the Germans rolled through the Soviet Union, in order to survive with her kids, she must flee her home and must join up with the partisans in the area to have food and, you know, support her children. And in doing so, gets involved with the partisan movement and finds that she is quite adept as this kind of guerrilla soldier.
Yeah, yeah. And we get this tale of her living through this period of time where the Germans are going into Russia. If you took a history class and you remember it all, the Germans made a real deep push into Russia.
That's what I want to talk to you about, Josh.
And it got cold. Did you know that it gets cold in Russia?
Oh, I'm in Germany right now, and it's already cold here, and we're in February now, so I would imagine further east and further north would get a little bit colder on there. Here's what I want to ask you about, yeah. Josh. Since you're a history guy,
yeah.
You know, major bones in teaching history and among yeah. other things on there, when it comes to World War II, I always say I'm like, when it comes to parts of history, I always find that teenagers are probably the most, I mean, they're teenagers, right? So if you ask them anything about history, sometimes like, oh, I don't know. But when it comes to World War II history, they seem to be like, here, on the AP Lang essay, everyone yeah. uses Hitler as an example. Why? Because it's like the thing you all know.
Yeah.
In teaching World War II, have you ever taught a specific World War II class?
No, I never taught a specific World War II class.
Did you ever take one in college?
Yes, I took several. I took a World War II class. I took a Russian history class.
I was going to ask.
Yeah.
Is do you think this era or this area of World War II, like the Russian, the Soviet front, the Russian front?
Yeah.
I guess it's Russian front at that point, right?
No, they're the Soviets.
Soviets at that point. Soviets. Yeah. At the Soviet front at this point, do you feel like American history textbooks do a good job of exploring that aspect? I always feel like it's like the Western front.
I think the problem
where everything's really quiet, guys. Everything is all quiet on the Western
front. I think what happens is just a nature of American history and writing American history textbooks, right? Part of that is the focus is going to be on Americans, right? So Americans weren't in the Soviet front. Their battle was, you know, D-Day and Normandy and pushing up into Africa and then the island hopping in World War II in Japan. So, and the other side of that is after World War II, we are in the Cold War with the Soviet Union. So we don't want to praise the Soviet Union in our history books. We don't want to spend time talking about the Soviets doing something good
point.
Right? So a lot of American history, because it comes out and the focus of it
next like 40 years, really.
Yeah. We don't want to talk about the Soviets being good or the Soviets. Yeah. We try to hide the fact that, yeah, we worked with the Soviets, the United States. We had this common enemy in the Nazis in Germany. So we don't, that Soviet history and that Soviet war part, I didn't really learn a lot about that. I mean, you learn like, yeah, they tried to push all the way to Stalingrad, and it didn't, you know, it didn't work. They froze out, you know, their lines got too long so the Soviets could come and cut their lines off. But you don't spend a lot of time in it because it's not American. And I didn't really learn a lot about it until I was in college. But then, you know, my Russian history class was a lot of like all of Russian history, right? So a lot of the czars and czarinas, and you make your way through that and into World War II. And then it was a lot of Cold War focus. So a lot of the focus on that class was Cold War and not this period of time during World War II. But I think I really enjoy this book because it's a part of history that we don't have a lot of information on. We know Garth Ennis loves World War II.
War stories in general. Vietnam was a big part of Preacher.
Interesting thing, while reading this, while reading Partisan, I am also reading a novel about World War I and a German prison camp where they're taking these, it's all of these European and American soldiers are in this German prison camp, and they are led through the Alps to Switzerland so that they can go to a Swiss neutrality place, right? And there's like, you know, it's like a supernatural thing where they come across this mountain village in Germany and, they worship this god Mithra, and they're trying to put this demon inside of one of these, prisoners, this whole thing. Right. But it's interesting, like the two things in my world right now that I've been reading are a Russian World War II story and then a World War I, like novel. So like, lots of war for me right now, but
then
what I
and then plus with which is a World War II,
which is a World War II that I'm currently reading. So Travis, I want to ask you this. So we're in this. How much did you know about this part? I mean, you brought it up. So how much did you know about World War II piece with Russian history? And I mean, you're in Germany. I'm always curious about how these things are treated when you're in Germany. I mean, you didn't go to school in Germany, right?
No,
teach at an American school. So
yeah, I've got to go to like, you know, some concentration camps in Poland and stuff like that. So we get to see some of that stuff on there. But honestly, I think this goes back to our conversation about Sarah a few years ago, where Sarah, for me, was the first time getting that kind of character-based story where we're in the Soviet front during World War II.
Yeah.
And of course Sarah was like, you know, like part of like, I believe like the Soviet army as like an assassin, I believe.
A sniper.
And so that was, I think, one of the reasons I liked that was I was like, oh, this is, I feel like I'm getting, like I'm being put into the scene, you know, which with graphic novels, especially historical graphic novels, fictional historical graphic novels, is that you get to not just read a period fiction piece, but you get to see all like the, oh, that does look cold, or like, ooh, that's the kind of forest that they were trudging through, or like, oh, like this is, you know, what they had to eat. And so for this one, you mentioned something in the history of the Soviet front where you're talking about the Germans stretching out that line to Stalingrad. Like this long line, you know, you have to get deep into Russia and really hit the heart of it. And so I was like, oh, partisan forces, like these kind of guerrilla forces would be key in cutting off that long line, as you said on here. So this story really does kind of follow like, hey, you know, the reason the Germans couldn't get that far into Germany is because it's a long way. And it wasn't just German forces they were fighting. It was these civilians who you think you're like, well, they're patriotic and they're fighting. Like, no, they really had no choice. Like Alexandra does. It's like, if I'm going to survive this war, I have to kind of link up with one of these guerrilla groups. So what it really made me kind of think about was just like, oh, it was less of a choice for a lot of these families and men and women and children, but more of like, oh, the Soviet army has the food and supplies And then what trickles down from them, what can be gotten is the partisans. And I am neither of those. So
yeah,
I'm going to have to join up with one. And oh, I'm not a man of fighting age. So I guess it's partisans for me. I'm a woman.
Right, right. So I thought that was.
Or I'm an ex-child story author.
Yeah, it was a really interesting idea. So I think what Garth Ennis does well, and I think why this works really well, is what you said. It's not a story of the front. It's not a story of the war in general. We're focused in on one character and her travels through this period of time, which I think is a really good, you think like Band of Brothers works because you're not telling the story of all of World War II. You're following a group of guys as they go through this. Saving Private Ryan, you're following this group that goes through this.
Inglourious Bastards.
Right. But you're focusing in on this sort of piece of it. And I think, you know, having, you know, a degree in history, it's a very like Marxist. And I know that like Marxism is also socialism, but it is when we talk about things like what are all the conservatives upset about at school? What are we teaching? Why can't I think what they're like, you're teaching kids about, oh crap. They're all like DEI, not DEI, but what's the other thing that they're all upset about?
DIY?
DIY. So Marxist historians are not socialists. They're not Marxist. It's just a tool to view history through a different lens, right?
Right.
So you're viewing history through a Marxist lens, which means you're viewing history through class struggle. You take history to the people side. You're not following the generals, you're not following the president or the leaders. It's not a story of Stalin or, you know, Churchill. It's a story of someone on the ground, right?
Plebeians.
So,
plebeians.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're following that. And I think that as someone who like that history degree that I spent time with, those are the things I really enjoyed the most, right? When you take the lens of war or the lens of a historical event and you shrink it in on people. Right. Like a book that I really liked a lot when I was going through my degree program was a book on Paul Revere's ride.
Yeah.
Right. And it focused in on all the people that were involved in Paul Revere's ride, like the people who you would send the message to. Right.
Right.
And so you're zooming that lens in. So I really enjoyed this
things like Red Badge of Courage or like you mentioned, All Quiet on the Western Front.
Yeah.
It's just like these. Hey, like someone like Killer Angels, that's like, oh, here's Grant talking and here's this. But like,
yeah,
we want to know like the average ground troop, the person, like the farmhand, Cold Mountain style.
Yeah.
Tell me the mom who has to go through like, you know, six different farms and like shoot people that she's never shot before and like get through this type of thing. Like the day-to-day struggle of the average civilian as opposed to like the already sanctified heroes of these wars.
Right. I want to come back to this later. So put a pin in, just remind me later, Josh, you wanted to talk about letters from the front. So just remind,
okay,
I want to do that right now. I want to get back to this. So this book really is that struggle of a single person. We're following her thing and we're seeing all these pieces where we see the rounding up of the Jews and we see the Germans rounding up the Jews from this village. Like, they're like, where is everybody, right? And they're going through the woods, and they see them in this mass grave standing there. And then the Germans open fire.
Rough and you scene.
Right? Just all of the Jews naked and just there. And this whole area, it is such an interesting, like, pardon me, an interesting, like, look at this piece of World War II, right? And this idea of how the war impacts people. I mean, that's a really important piece for this, is it's really about how the war impacts one family and the people that surround that family. So I really thought it was a really interesting take on that.
No, I hear you. and Josh?
Yeah.
I heard you. No, but I think that's the strength. I think that was the strength of Sarah, but this is even a little bit more, even into like Sarah was like, very much following an army. And also Sarah had like this uncanny ability. It was almost like superhero in a certain way, in the sense that she was kind of endowed with like oh, I can pick off someone.
Yes. From, like, you know, I have this very specific skill, right?
Skill set. Yeah. Whereas Alexandra, our main protagonist on here, is all just grit and determination, right? And just like the ability to just like natural, like observing, following orders. Like several scenes in this book, especially in when once we get to like the third act on here, there's some vignettes about common partisan attacks where she's calling out mistakes people typically make. Oh, don't stand there after you've attacked because you're going to get run over by tanks.
Right.
Don't do this because you're going to get this. Don't do this because you're going to get this. So she just has a natural kind of instinct for combat, especially and because her children's survival depends on her being good and also surviving all these attacks.
Yeah.
She has to become very aware at it. And we place her character in contrast at points in this book to like young, like male partisan troops who are like, wow, like it's great to be out here fighting for what's right. And she's like, oh, you're going to die.
Yeah. And there's a bunch of horrific scenes, right? Like
what I want to talk about.
There's many horrific scenes, Travis Ratz. There's like the dogs attacking babies. There's like the Germans sticking their dogs on kids. There's several scenes where they're fleeing their camp to find the next place because the Germans have come through. There's one scene where, you know, she is supposed to be the person who gives the signal, right? She is working in the she's working in the home where the German military is kind of based. She's supposed to give the signal for the partisans to attack the building, right?
She's supposed to unlock a door and give the signal. That's her only job.
But she's the one who literally does it all, right?
Cuts the throat.
Slits the leader's throat, throws a grenade, lights the place on fire, and she is pissed that she had to go through this and the rest of the partisans didn't do their part. She's like, what? You left me in there. I'm like, we couldn't do it. And
the storm is too cold. It's too cold. We would have frozen. Like, I'm surprised that you even made it here. Like, listen, like, chill out. And she's like, well, now they know we're here.
Yeah.
Because you were supposed to be gone.
Yeah.
And this is what I want to talk about, Josh, this is where, you know, when we did Preacher way back in the day, maybe it was our second episode of the series or something like that, our podcast. And, you know, it was for you, it was like it took some time to get over like the senseless violence in which Ennis puts his stories.
Yeah.
And what we're seeing with like 30 years later with Garth Ennis is that as opposed to making the gore and the most, grotesque aspects of humanity, like every scene.
Yeah.
Now it's become a tool in his writer's box. It's not his main brush, but he has that in him. So when we see the group of Jewish town folks being gunned down,
yeah,
like he pulls the camera back. In Preacher, he would have shown you bullets going through heads and buttholes and all that stuff in Preacher style. Here, he cuts the camera away, right?
He's more subdued. Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't times when you see people get mowed down by machine guns, right?
But it feels more purposeful and appropriate in his storytelling at his age now.
And the horror of war, right? Like that's what he's showing you, this kind of horrors of war stuff. And there's this whole thing, like, you know, there's a very, one of the other gals who works with the partisans, like her face is kind of half burnt off. She's missing a couple fingers, but that doesn't happen till the end. Right. And it's not this sort of like, hey, look at this deformed person. Right.
Even so, I would say even more of a Garth Ennis scene, which he would show before, but now he alludes to, is that at one point Alexandra is captured.
Yeah.
And the way they decided to torture her involves electricity, in a very uncomfortable place. And I'm not talking about the back of a Volkswagen, like in Mallrats, right? Yeah. But like, yeah. And like the old Garth Ennis would have been like, okay, we're going to show like someone bent over and we're going to show where the electricity is going. This yeah. Garth Ennis is like, I'm just going to suggest it.
Yes. Yeah. And I just like the idea of like, if you like, this is that whole piece where it's like, look, this is an electrical wire. And if you don't tell me where, if you're not going to tell me where they are, this is going somewhere. I'm going to put this wire yeah. somewhere. And she goes, well, I mean, I'm not going to tell you where you're going to find my children. So,
yeah. You know, like, and screw her, you. One of the things that repeats throughout the story is like, my husband and I do not tell each other everything from our yeah. experiences. That repeats several times. It actually repeats
like every time. Yeah.
And I want to say it would be, I guess we're just spoiling, right? But the point for me where I said we got ourselves a comic was early on the first act of this comic book when Alexandra's escaping with her Jewish neighbor friend.
Yeah.
And the Jewish neighbor friend loses like a young child who's shot in escaping, but she has a baby, a newborn baby.
Yeah.
And they are surrounded by German forces. They're trying to hide out in this riverbed. And Alexandra is trying to protect her kids. And this newborn is crying.
Yeah.
And she's like, for like the love of God, whatever you do, like whatever you must summon, like, please just shut that kid up for like just a minute. Shut this kid up.
Yeah.
Panel goes, we cut to this other woman crying, and she was like, I just put him in the water for a moment.
Yeah.
She drowned her own child and to keep that child quiet, survive.
Yeah.
So that Alexandra's children would have a shot at not being.
Yeah.
And gosh, Josh, that got me.
We got a comic here.
Goodness sakes.
Look, there's all sorts of things you could say. I mean, Garth Ennis is Garth Ennis, but he knows how to write a war story. He does. He's able to zoom in on these moments and these people and make them compelling and tell a brutal tale. This is a brutal story. Beat to beat, terrible things happen, and it's about the things you need to do to survive, right?
Which has been a thing with Garth Ennis from Preacher to The Boys. I mean, obviously those are more like comical and gory in a way, but it's all about like, oh, you don't think someone would do this? You don't think someone would do this most grotesque thing or absurd thing or, you know, immoral thing to survive? Oh, Garth Ennis is going to be like, let me show you. Let me play that out in a way that makes it a little bit more believable. Oftentimes that's done with humor. But in this, it's done with just all pathos.
Just brutal. I mean, this was a super emotional story, and all of this brutality happens and we get a good closeout, Travis Ratz. Like, I was surprised that we got the ending we got. I didn't expect it, but I should have, because throughout she's saying, you know, like, there are things that my husband and I will never share with each other. I won't tell him. I won't tell him about this. Right. And at the end, they make it back to their farm. They see tanks coming through and they're worried. Right. What is it? And then it just happens to be her husband, who's also lost his arm in the war. Right. But like this whole, you get this sort of, you tie a ribbon on it. She's been through the worst. She's been through the ringer, but her children survived. She survived. And her husband came out the other side too, right? And it's this weird thing where it's this brief moment, right? It's like, I don't know how many years it is in the book, but let's just say it's like a year or two or whatever it is that this takes place in, that they're struggling through this moment. And you're like, okay, all right. Like, what is that? And we don't get this in the book, except for those hints of, I'll never talk to him about this. We won't talk to each other about this. My brain goes to, what is the rest of their time together like that they don't talk about this, right? Like, what impact does this brutality and these moments? Because you know that he has his own story about all the terrible things he's
seen. There's definitely some trauma bonding going on there.
Yes.
but probably an incredible amount of distance with that as well. I mean, she was physically, sexually abused in this war.
Yeah.
You know, and he was mangled. He was malformed. He's losing an arm on here. So it just becomes maybe about breathing together as most basic level. One of the things I want to talk about before we talk about art is one of the things I found very powerful is there's this other character that survives the story. I forgot the character's name now, but it's basically like this former child book author.
Yeah.
And he kind of keeps Alexandra's children safe because she's a much better soldier than he is. So he kind of becomes like the parental figure.
Like a grandfather. While she's out on missions. Right? Like,
And we find out that he left his family, disowned his parents because during like the rise of communism, they encouraged people to the citizens of Russia to turn in anyone who displayed
an enemy of the state. Yeah.
Yes. And so this created something historically, which it was just like, oh, this person owns a book. This person owns a horse in this case. And if you didn't turn someone in, then you were fresh fodder to be turned in.
Yeah.
Right. So when you turn someone in, that shows the state that you are loyal. And if you don't turn someone in, then someone's going to use you as a way to show they're loyal to the state.
Yeah.
And so this writer's parents, father, did that. He's turned in his neighbor. He said they own a horse. Of course, they're farmers or something like that. Maybe not. Yeah. Maybe it wasn't a horse. Maybe it was a plow or something. Anyways, he was like, oh, screw that. Like, I reject them and everything about them. I'm leaving. But the end of the story, he's like, you know, I've been thinking about my parents and watching you all, you know, these years and realizing
they were just
what you
did
for your kids. They were just taking care of me. And it's about doing whatever is necessary.
Yeah.
And he goes, I got to leave. I'm walking to Paris.
Yeah. Like a very, like, what? And then I
was like, God dang, that's
heavy.
That's like human.
Yeah. I think the other piece of this is you see during this time, Alexandra's daughter is becoming a woman, right?
Yeah.
And there's a boy who's on the front and who's getting a new person who joined the partisan, getting close. And she's like, no, we're not doing this. You stay away from my daughter. He goes to the front lines, head blown off, right? Like it's this whole, like, it is this very, you're seeing all of this war, but you're also seeing like, what it means to be a parent, what it means to raise kids, what it means to make decisions that are, you know, maybe not the greatest, but they're designed to take care of the people that you love, right?
It's very Gone with the Wind, Josh, now that we're thinking about it. It's very Gone with the Wind. Like a woman who's forced, she wasn't from a place of privilege, but a sense of just like completely changed by the war.
It's a great book. So let's talk about the art. Let's talk about Steve Apting. One of the reasons this book works so well is it is gorgeous. It really is. The art is fantastic. Steve Apting, you know, a very kind of heavy inks, dark lines, great facial acting throughout. You know, there are times where you can just see the pain on people's faces, the shock on their faces. You get the anger, the rage, the suffering with all of these characters. The background scenes, the trees, the tanks, the guns, everything. There is not a panel on here where I was like, oh, that doesn't look right, or that's not good. He's a great artist. And then Jordi Belair is a fantastic, you know, colorist who is doing a great job giving you, I mean, this all takes place in the woods in the winter. So you get those cold blues and blacks, and then when they're near the fire, you get those oranges and reds, and then during the daytime, you're getting those muddy greens and like browns. It is just a gorgeous book, Travis Ratz. Yeah, and you and I were both lucky.
The combat scenes with like the barrel fires and the coloring and what those blasts look like. I mean, this is a gorgeous book.
It is. And you were lucky enough to get it in. You didn't have to read it digital. You got to hold it in your hand.
Yeah.
Like a real boy.
Yeah. And like my little tiny hands, because this is a big oversized book.
I do so love like that's
a little tiny child reading this thing.
That's the one thing TKO does a great job of, like the size. I love the size. Yeah. It's that bigger print size. It's taller. It's a little wider.
Right?
It's
nice.
Like, yeah. That really like 11. I can't. It's probably like, I don't know the size on it, but it is.
Yeah. This is like European size paper.
Yeah. It's almost, it's not
A1, A2.
It's not as wide as like a French print would be. Right. Yeah. But it's tall. Right. So you get that good tall version of it. And he does there weren't times when I was confused about who was who. The men are a little confusing sometimes, but yeah. They aren't the focal point. So that's okay. Right. Like to go like, what Russian partisan is that?
Some of the women too, other than Alexandra, like her friend versus like the other partisan commander, I would get confused sometimes, but
man, it is
worked out.
Just a gorgeous book. Steve Epting does a really good job. And Jordi Belair is always just a fantastic colorist. And I think if TKO could go and decide this is the kind of stuff we're going to get great artists and great authors and just let them do their thing. I think that that's kind of a winning combination, right?
I would love to see this team do a Vietnam story.
Ooh, that'd be good, Travis Rance.
Just like, good. You know, just to see Epting like do some jungle backgrounds,
yeah.
And to see Belair color that would be pretty awesome.
Yeah, it would be great. It would look very good. So I wanted to bring this back around. And I think one of the things that I think that this does really well, like I said earlier, was this idea of like following a person through their time during the war, right? And I had to do a project in college with the Civil War where we had to go through archives and read soldiers' letters from the front and then write an essay about what we learned about this soldier's experience by reading their letters home and like the communication back and forth, because there are archives, there are archives throughout in all these different historical archives from different states and then national archives where they've taken these letters. And our goal was to read a batch of letters. And then what did we learn about these people? What did we learn about their experiences? What did we learn about the war? And to me, that idea of like, what is the personal experience during war is why this works so well, right? It feels like because you're getting her narrative over top of it at times, because you're getting it from her perspective, it feels so much closer. And I think that that's what makes this book work really well, is it feels like she is telling you her story of what happened to her on the front lines, right? And what did it mean to be
and her? Like in a letter home, like she's being very honest, but you can also tell she's holding back on things too,
right
just because like for us the reader, it's like, listen, this is it's important for you to know these things, and just like for her husband, I can't tell you everything. So it always, like, as you're reading this book, you're like, this is freaking awful, oh my god, that's tragic, but also like there's so much more she's not telling us.
Wait, it pulls away.
We couldn't handle it. Yeah.
It pulls away at moments. And we talked about it, like when she's kind of tortured, when she's captured, right? It pulls away from that moment.
And, right? And that's how a lot of maybe those letters are that you read, where it's sense like, this is brutal. Like what like, you know, you're writing your mom a letter, you know, you want to be honest, but you're like, not going to be like, oh yeah. Also like, I was buried under a pile of legs that were blown off on there. Like, you're not going to, you know, write that to your sweetheart or your mom or like, you know, on there. Yeah,
exactly. So it was to me, this book excels because it's ground level. It is the take from one person's perspective, and you get to follow them through their journey. There are different ways to do this where he could have done one partisan event and followed that person through one event that I think would have been powerful. But I think because you get her whole trajectory through this moment, it's a very powerful story. You get to see
I liked it.
What shaped her, Very, very good read. I mean,
yeah, especially early in the calendar year too.
Early in, this is the third book we've read for the year.
Yeah.
We're off to a good start. We're off to a good start, Travis. Yeah. All right. Next,
we got another TKO book coming up.
Yeah. Next book coming up is Witches of World War II. Another TKO book is we're talking World War II and women in World War II. The main character
and
in that
TKO
book.
Women, yeah. World War II.
Women, World War II.
Didn't know it was a genre. Apparently it is.
It is. And so we are going to discuss that book next. That'll be the next book. So again, I do believe they're still running a sale through TKO. So if you're like, ooh, I want to.
Well, I do believe they're running a sale for TKO.
So I do declare that you can find yourself those books and read them. So if you want to tag along with us, feel free to do that. Folks, we are back on Instagram. We are using the gram. We've revived the gram. So if you want to follow along with us on Instagram, it's at Comic Exposure. I'm posting what we're reading. I'm throwing some questions up on the old stories there. I'm doing polls from my shelf, random polls from Josh's comic book shelf.
Yeah,
that you can,
I love it.
Why does Josh have that weird book? Because he does.
I've done a couple of replies, Josh, and I never reply texting or social media in general.
Yeah. Yeah. So you can follow us along there. You can find all of our shows over at our website, comicexposure.com, or on whatever podcast app, aggregator, locator, listener that you find us on. Rate us, review us, all that stuff. It really does help. If you're on Apple Podcasts and you write a review, that helps us make it to the top so that people find us. Same thing on Spotify. So if you write a review on Spotify, rate us on Spotify, that helps people find us. We are, there are lots and lots of comic book podcasts out there. So we appreciate that you spend some time with us. We do something different, where I think that we just find random stuff to read. We want you to read along and hang out with us. So next up, which is a World War II. And then apparently we're reading some He-Man later on. So, get ready for He-Man.
We call it He-Spring.
He-Spring, yes. Masters of the Spring stuff.
Yes.
That's what we're going to call it. So thank you for tuning in. Travis and I will see you next trade.